Hey, welcome in, everybody. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Hope you had a restful bye week. We're ready to hit the ground running this morning. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, senior writer from Jaguars.com, and, of course, Fat Tony here with us as well, live at Everbank Field. And maybe that's a good omen, Warren playing the highlight of the Scobies 59-yarder to beat the Colts. Colts week. John Osier.
Colts week. Here
what do you
go,
think?
Baby.
59-yard. You take a 59-yard right now. 59-yard attempt with 1 second left on the clock. You would take that in a heartbeat. Right?
Absolutely, you take that. Absolutely, you
kicking
take that.
A kicking chance to win the football game. As bad as the kicking game has been at times this year, you would love this.
Put
to
it
be
in
a four
Scobie's hands
game.
Or his feet.
Put it on his foot. That's right. You know what? He's got redemption on his mind after getting blocked against the Tennessee Titans. Few days off for the Ozone. I know you're never really off.
Never
you're
really
always
off.
Working for the people. But a few days out of the building, a little time to the family, to decompress, all that good stuff.
Yeah, went down to the South Carolina-Florida game on Saturday. And as you know, I don't get to see very many games from the stands. It's just not something you do when you
sure.
cover. And always interesting to watch from that point of view. And that was, you know, It was striking sitting in the stands of Florida how tired they were of the situation. And then as soon as they kicked, you know, as soon as South Carolina won, you just figured that it was probably the end for Muschamp. I don't know him, but too bad because I hear he's a good guy. But it just, with that many empty seats there and all that, it just seemed like it was time.
I assume they're all good guys. Too bad, too
sad.
You know what? It's too bad for Florida State
that
he couldn't hang on for one more season.
It's
too bad.
I guess he's getting $6 million to walk away.
That's pretty rough, right?
I'm a good guy too, Mike.
$6 million to walk away.
I want $6 million to walk away.
To make sure you don't go work somewhere, right?
Exactly.
In that part of the deal, he can't go work.
I'm a good guy.
Give
me $6 million.
I would take that in a heartbeat, John. I'd never bother you.
Tell you what,
again.
I'm not a good guy, and I'll take $3 million.
I would darken your doorway never again. You know what? We can have a bidding war here, all right? I might get down to $2 million.
That's right.
I've always said $4 million after taxes is my never hear from me again money. I
don't
know
why. Money.
I've never talked to a financial planner in my life, Tony. What do I know if $4 million's enough?
Like
or
you
not
wouldn't
enough.
Take $3 million.
Like I would take $1 million, right? I mean, come on.
Exactly.
Let's now people right now are saying, oh, I got $3.
Right,
so
right.
I can pitch in. It shouldn't be that hard to get done. What were you able to, in terms of looking at the final six games, were you able to kind of give a little reflection to what you think the Jags are going to be able to do coming off a week off? Is it going to be good for them? Is it going to be something that kind of resets their energy level, going into the last month and a half?
I think it will because, I said last week on the show that I was on and you weren't on Monday.
Yes.
That,
it's still called Jaguars today, by the
right,
way.
That, you know, it felt in the locker room after Dallas like this team, you know, and you say frustrated, you say whatever, you say, you know, all the things that the fans have heard, but it felt different in that locker room. These guys were really jolted by it. They didn't expect to come out and play that poorly. They didn't expect to be out of the game by halftime. And they really believed that they had been improving. They had seen signs of it and thought they were close. And then all of a sudden, they just weren't against Dallas. So I think they'll come back, and I think you'll see a similar energy, a similar, you know, enthusiasm, whatever that word is that you saw after the bye last year. I don't know that you'll see them roll off a 4 or 5. I don't know that the schedule plays out as well as it did coming off the bye last year. But I'd be surprised if you don't see them get back to sort of that trend of getting closer that they were before Dallas.
Well, this will be a good measuring stick because they've played Indy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously 30-0 at the half might have been the low point of the season, right? Followed by one of the
low
high
point
points.
Of something.
Right. And followed by one of the high points, obviously, the debut of Blake Bortles.
Right.
And he played pretty well in that second half, a couple of touchdowns, a couple
right.
of picks, and got people excited about that. Now faces the same team again. Really, the first time he's had a return encounter
mm-hmm.
in the National
right.
Football League. And I know Gus talked about that last week. Teams are getting a little bit of tape on
right.
him, saying, hey, here's what he likes to do. Here's what his
right.
strengths are. Let's see if we can take those away from
right.
him.
Right. And that's a key because in the same press conference, Gus also mentioned that right now what they need Blake to do is they need him to keep getting the 6 games of experience, the 6 games on the field, so that he has a body of work in the off season to say, okay, here's what I am. Here's what teams are doing against me. Here's where I have to improve. this offseason, I think, is more important for him development-wise than the last six games. But he's got to figure—it has to be on tape, and then they have to see, okay, here's what teams believe your strengths are, so here's where we're going to go from here, here's where you have to improve. It's the development process of any young quarterback, but that's where he's going to make the biggest road. So I think it's vitally important, as much as anything, that he stay healthy and get those snaps and get that experience, because that's where he's going to grow.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And the more reps he gets at this point, obviously, the better for him going into the offseason, have a better body of work to build on.
And that said, you do want to see him have a couple of games at least where the plays that he makes are more memorable than the mistakes that
sure.
he makes. You know, and that hasn't been the case a whole lot this season. I don't think you're going to see six games of perfection. I don't think you're going to see six games without an interception. You're going to see some mistakes. But you do want to have a few where you walk out of it going, okay, I see. That's why he's going to be the guy. I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation for the last six games for him.
It is interesting when you look at the playoff picture in the National Football League right now. In the NFC, you know, you can be 4-6 leading a
division.
Did they
move the Jags to the NFC South?
They have not
done that.
Is that
what you're getting at? All right.
They'd still be in it.
Well, because I sent an email. I didn't know if that had gotten through or not.
No. They took it under advisement,
all right, well,
but they did not go through
that. They usually listen to me in New York, so
Oakland, now 0-10, has officially been eliminated from playoff contention. Okay? The Jags are soon to follow. At 1-9.
We'll see about that.
Yes. All they are soon to follow at 1-9. But as we were told this morning, Gus Bradley's in there, first day after the bye, team meeting, and is selling them on the legacy of 2014. And doing so in typical Gus Bradley fashion, where you end up leaving the room ready to run through the proverbial brick wall, saying, look, what are people going to say about you a year from now, 2 years from now? Oh, yeah, that was that team that quit. That was that team that did nothing. That was that team that was a complete and utter failure. Or are they going to say that's that team that, despite the fact that they were 1-9, turned up in the last month and a half of the season and gave us a glimpse of better things to come?
Well, and as wrong as that may sound to people, if you look back on last season, that's exactly what happened last season. At 0-8, we're coming out of London, coming off the bye, and it was very similar feeling to right now, where fans were like, this is a lost season, play for the draft, whatever. But by the end of the season, because they won those 4 out of 5 games, there was definitely a better feeling around this franchise and a better feeling of, okay, we're taking a step forward. And without question, the last six games can determine a little more of how you go into the offseason. It's not going to make a season a success, but it can certainly give you more of an energy. It can certainly change your perception within the team and around the league.
There's no question about it, because they ended the season with 3 consecutive losses last year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks about that. I don't think it's willful. I think you focus on, wow, here's a team that looked as bad as any had ever looked mm-hmm. in the NFL
sure.
for a stretch, for a half of a season,
right.
and they were able to do what they did over a 5-week period, which
right.
was pretty impressive. And you're right, that will write the story of how this team is talked about in the offseason. Won't ultimately change their fortunes in the future. As
no.
we saw last year, all that positive buzz, well, it's led to a 1-9 record
sure.
so far. And we understand all the reasons that go into that. So we'll talk about where the Jags are headed in the final six games. If you want to jump on board today, 641-1010 on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you now, with the exception of Monday Night Football, Pittsburgh and Tennessee, Week 11 in the books, what is the matchup you foresee for the Super Bowl in February? I had Patriots-Seahawks. Feel pretty good about the Patriots right now.
Mm-hmm.
Seahawks right now wouldn't even be in the postseason in the NFC. They're in eighth position right now, just behind San Fran with tiebreakers, and of course, you know, going to be much made about Atlanta in there with a 4-6 record. You had what? Did you have New Orleans and Denver?
Yeah, New Orleans, Denver.
Denver.
Good call, a New Orleans pick.
Yes. New Orleans is.
They might be hosting a playoff game.
They're a tiebreaker away from hosting a playoff game, is exactly the situation for them. Denver.
I don't see them going on the road to Arizona and possibly, Dallas and winning playoff games to get to a Super Bowl.
I think Dallas is going to have a tough time getting in, boy. I mean, they're,
I don't know. 7-3 You know,
AFC's tough.
You got San Fran. You got Seattle. You got to wonder, is Philly, what direction are they headed? We can't read too much into one outcome against Green Bay, but they were bad yesterday.
Right.
They were a bad football team. Mark Sanchez's numbers at the end weren't so bad.
They still played twice, by the way.
But the play, those two head to head. So that's going to determine the division.
I think they'll get in, but it's going to be an interesting down the stretch in the NFC because Detroit's not bad. Arizona's
apparently really good.
Right.
Because, even with Drew Stanton, Detroit.
And even if they're not good, they're tough to catch now because they're 9-1.
Exactly. So they got a 3-game lead in the division.
12-4.
They got a 2-game lead on the conference.
Right.
Right.
So even if they do struggle, which I anticipate at some point Drew Stanton will struggle, but even if they do, then you've got to really fall apart to get to 11-5.
Well, you know what I liked about him yesterday? I didn't watch much of the game, but they flipped it over after Green Bay and Philly was out of hand. Was here it was, like, 3rd-and-14, right? You're up 8. Detroit's done not much offensively against you the entire day. I said, go throw for the first down. Mm-hmm. They didn't just hand it off and try to pick up 5 yards, run a little more clock, or burn an extra timeout by the lines and kick. They let him go out there and make a play. And maybe that's easier when you are 8-1 and you're playing at home and all those things. But they let him go do it, and he was able to find Larry Fitzgerald for the first down. Not only has no team ever played in a Super Bowl in its own city, but I think I heard the statistic on SportsCenter last night. It might have been Sunday Night Football that only 5 teams have even made the postseason in the year that their stadium was hosting a Super Bowl. So right now, Arizona is feeling pretty good about their chances playing a home game.
Yeah.
Would be pretty cool.
49ers almost did it. 49ers played in Stanford Stadium 1 year. Which
the
was
closest
close to, yeah.
that it's been?
Yeah, when they beat Miami 38-16 in
that was the first Montana versus Marino, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was close, but again, it wasn't in Canada.
Right, it wasn't their home stadium, but this is actually the obviously official.
It'd be unbelievable.
What is it, University of Phoenix Stadium? That's what it used to be anyway.
I think it still is.
Is it still that?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm not positive.
Come on, straighten
it's
your
alma mater, isn't it?
You can share your thoughts with us today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, along with, of course, at 1010XL Lauren. Will set you up for the full day. Will Muschamp, press conference at noon. We'll have it here for you live on 1010XL 92.5 FM. In the meantime, it's a Muschamp free zone for the next hour and 45 minutes. Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Johnny, let's see what you can do. First full week back. We weren't here together. We couldn't put our heads together. I was 3 out of 4 coming up with the music themes last week and missed probably the easiest one of all.
Yes, you did.
Which was, we were talking about the bye week, and every song had the word bye in it. Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, Cold Shot.
Is Lauren saying the Jags can double their win total with a win this year? Is that what she's
saying?
That's a really good guess. I'm not, but that's a good guess.
It'll be a cold day in hell when that happens, maybe she's saying. I hope she's not saying that.
No.
No, of course not. They have a shot to win this week. I have no idea what she's
saying. You got it.
About.
Last one.
No way.
Yep.
They have a shot to win.
They have a shot to win.
That is not
but
really
But that's it.
It.
Really a shot. That's all they have. A shot.
So you pretty much took the weekend off and didn't put much thought into it.
I also got
a shot in my finger on Friday, and that kind of had me thinking that.
Right. How'd that go for you?
It was really scary because the therapist started to freak me out, and she's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you're about to get a shot in your joint. That just freaks me out. I can't even watch. And I was like, oh, God, do I, like, need someone to come hold my hand? I was told this wasn't going to be that painful. And then the doctor came in, gave the shot. It was no problem at all.
What did you do to your finger? You dislocated it?
Uh-huh, playing football on the beach.
And it has not healed properly? Is
that is correct, yeah. That happened in August, and it's still all swollen, and it doesn't bend at all. So
maybe back off the bench press for a few weeks.
The pull-ups, I don't really
something. Bench. I know that's your button pushing finger too.
It is. I know. So and so when the doctor said you might need surgery, I was like, but I can't. I can't produce.
How am I going to be able to turn the microphones on, Doc? Right. I must use this finger.
Yeah. So it might be bent forever. We'll see.
All right. Well, you being good.
But
company.
Thanks for caring.
Yeah. Well. You're welcome. it'll go down like Torrey Holt and Larry Bird and all the rest of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Unitas.
That's right.
Anthony Munoz.
It's my old football.
He does have one of those, doesn't he? Which way did that thing point? His pinky points out?
It's like out and down.
Yeah, something.
Whenever he joins us at the Super Bowl,
it's his kickstand. He calls it his kickstand. Yeah. That's the way it goes, John. I'm sure you got that from writer's cramp and what have you. Keyboard cramp. Nothing like that?
No, just 10 nimble fingers.
Still ready to go, as good as always. All right, Jags will get Mercedes Lewis back this week. They obviously lose Allen Robinson. I don't think that had come out when you were on last Monday.
No.
I think that was a Tuesday story.
Right. Yeah, and you know, thing with Allen Robinson, for the short term for this team, you would love to have him in the game because he's been very consistent. I don't want to say he's been a surprise, but but you're not too concerned if you're the Jaguars about what he's going to be at this point. I think he's shown you that he's going to be good. He's got enough on video now that when they go back in the off season and say, okay, where do you need to improve? Where do you need to get better? He's shown what he's going to be. He's shown what he needs to work on. I think you feel like you've got something solid there. I don't say blessing in disguise, but if you can get Marquise Lee into that spot or into more playing time, the benefits of getting Marquise Lee going and getting Marquise Lee the sort of game experience that Allen Robinson had could be as important as what Allen Robinson has done.
Yeah, I think so. But wouldn't you suspect, at least I suspect, that if Allen Hurns is over his concussion issues, mm-hmm. he's going to play ahead of Marquise Lee?
Sure.
Right? So
absolutely. It'll get Marquise Lee. I mean, there's no way it won't get Marquise Lee on the field. And Marquise Lee needs to be on the field because he's got to figure this out. He's got to get better, and he needs some confidence going into the offseason.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with any of that. The way I look at it, it's a shame that the opportunity was there for him to get on the field because he was the highest pick. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, the door was wide open, and every opportunity was given to him.
And he got hurt at a bad time. He's struggled. Out of the three rookie receivers, he's clearly struggled the most. The hamstring injury, when it happened, didn't help. But now, I mean, we were talking earlier. The team has a chance to sort of rewrite how it's going to be remembered. Out of all the players, Marquise Lee's really got a chance to rewrite sort of how his rookie season will be remembered. He has a good six games, and you're feeling a lot better about him going to the offseason. Right now, that's not the case.
What happened was it just the emergence of Allen Hurns and you needed to play him more early on in the season? Because go back to the first game, mm-hmm. and you really look at the way they tried to use him in the preseason. They said, we're just going to throw him to him a bunch on these short patterns and see if he can just let his instincts take over and run after the catch. And he had six receptions in week one.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just the emergence of Hurns at that point that you said, wow, we got to let this guy is proven to be a playmaker. Let's look to get him the ball more here.
Allen Robinson. And then I forget when he got hurt. I think it was week three he got hurt or very early on. So all of a sudden he's out three games with a hamstring. You didn't bring him back quickly. So that didn't help. And he struggled. He needs to start running routes better. He needs to figure out those NFL things that a receiver needs to figure out. Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, a little ahead of him right now on that front. But it's important because Marquise is very, very talented. Maybe the most talented receiver on the roster, but it's more than that in this league. You've got to have the subtleties, the intricacies, whatever, the details of route running. And that's what that's his task the last six games of the season.
Which is interesting because it probably shows you just how talented he really is. That he can be the Biletnikoff Award winner and be, essentially as raw as he is at the finer points of playing the position.
Well, most college receivers are.
To a degree. Mm-hmm. We talked with Gerard about this last week and brought up the fact that you have so many of these rookies now. Mm-hmm. playing prominent roles, receivers, mm-hmm. big numbers that they're putting. Look at Mike Evans yesterday. I realize Mike Evans is a bit of a physical mismatch, and they throw him jump balls and different things like that, but 209 yards receiving, a couple touchdowns. Kelvin Benjamin has been, he's been hit and miss, but you look at the final numbers, and you're like, wow, it's fantastic. Sammy Watkins, when healthy, has looked like the real deal. Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Cooks, that's just the first rounders. You know, you go well beyond that. And I asked him, why is it that we're seemingly seeing, certainly this year, but just recently we're seeing more of that. He thinks it's a case of better coaching in the discipline of running routes in college. He thinks these guys are being better prepared coming out. So if that's the case, it's certainly probably a factor.
Sure,
into
absolutely.
It. You know, when you compare all these, everybody taken ahead of Marquise Lee is getting it done, and several guys taken after him, including Allen Robinson, were getting it done to a pretty high level. Jordan Matthews, another guy who's showing that he's coming on now up in Philadelphia. So
this is his chance. I mean, you know, and again, I never really worry about a receiver in the first year because I've seen too many guys come back from rocky first years at that position. But, you know, he's got a chance to have his rookie season be fine.
Yeah, when it's all said and done, sure.
But the last six games are going to determine it.
Right, and it's not even so much about does he put up big numbers. Is he learning these finer points? And like you said, can he gain some of this confidence that he can take into the next offseason?
You'd like to see him, by the end of the season, you have a similar feeling about him than you do Allen Robinson right now. Right now, when we talk about Allen Robinson, I don't think there's any doubt, anybody sitting at this table, that Allen Robinson is going to be a good player for a long time.
Yes.
So that's if you can get that out of Marquise Lee, then all of a sudden you've got three guys, because I think Allen Hurns, I wouldn't put Allen at the level of the other Allen, but you feel good about him as a productive guy. Then you've got three guys you can go forward with that you feel pretty good about.
You've got two. You want Marquise Lee to feel, because right now it feels so far from this, and it may end up being this way by default down the stretch, but you want him to feel like one of those spots is his. In two wide receiver sets, like he is the man, like he should look at himself as the alpha dog in this whole mix here. And that's not to take anything away from what Allen Robinson has done, but they drafted Lee ahead of him. Even though they liked him, they expected Lee to be gone.
Sure.
And it was a bit of a – I think they liked him pretty equally, and they gambled correctly that Robinson would last longer.
And again – guys mature at different paces, and we're talking about a very small window of time right now.
Absolutely.
In terms of his, you know, first 4 years here. But, you know, that would be a huge thing if in 6 weeks we were talking about Marquise Lee in relatively the same vein as we are in Allen Robinson.
What about Mercedes? Mentioned him at the top of the segment here. Coming back, how big of an impact will he make across the board? Passing game is a target, kind of an outlet for Blake Bortles. Obviously, in the running game is where we always rave about him.
Sure can't hurt. I mean, you know, you've got one more guy. I've always said this about Mercedes. You know, even when he's not incredibly productive in the passing game, he's important because defenses have to account for him, and he has elite level top 10 talent. So defenses have to account for him, and it opens things up for other players. And in the running game, obviously, he's always a help when he's in the game.
All of our future tight ends are getting hurt too. Jordan Cameron, probably done for the year.
Yep.
And Julius Thomas hurt his ankle yesterday. No x-rays.
Boy, and that really hurt Denver with him out.
I think it did. Yeah. I mean, and you add Sanders on top of that. Emmanuel Sanders has been outstanding for that team this year, and some of it's certainly Peyton Manning, who makes you look good. But they struggle. I mean, there's only a certain point you reach when you lose enough guys.
Yeah, when Peyton has three weapons in that offense, three legitimate guys who can beat single coverage, it's a very hard offense to stop. When it gets below about two, it becomes much easier to stop, especially if there's a pass rush on the other side.
Right, you got Demaryius Thomas out there. They had they have an outstanding pass rush in St. Louis.
At least
outstanding individual players. At times they haven't been great this year, but are playing better right now. Wes Welker.
Well, the Rams
like
wish they could play great teams every week.
Right, they get up for them.
I mean, they always beat the good teams.
Yeah, so it seems. You're absolutely right. All right, 641-1010 if you want to weigh in. We'll talk about a little what's going on around the National Football League and what John Osier expects out of your Jaguars going forward on the practice field coming up in about 45 minutes today. Gus Bradley and a number of players will meet with the media after that. You'll hear the fallout from that coming up later on this afternoon here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment here on 1010XL.
Oh, Beastie Boys, right?
Sure shot. They got a shot.
That's right.
I cannot believe that's the theme, but they got a shot.
Because you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. That's right.
There you go. Tony will break it down for you right now.
I like Beastie.
I know you do. All right, do the Jags indeed have a shot against Indy? I suppose, look, in today's NFL, where the Rams can not only beat Denver, beat a pretty sound one yesterday. You think that's the way the NFL works. Mm-hmm. And you should, I mean, look, Oakland had a shot to beat San Diego yesterday. Right. Didn't get it done. That's the difference. They did not get it done. They haven't gotten it done for the last 16 games. That's a long stretch for one Maurice Jones-Drew to endure. What's going on?
That's your guy, Maurice.
He is my guy. I talk to him every Friday. He'll be my guy again this Friday. He'll probably be 0-11 by then because they play on Thursday night against Kansas City.
Probably will be. That's the kind of insight you get from me. They probably will be.
But, I mean, look, you know, Kansas City, early in the season, looked terrible. They got blown out by Tennessee in week one. They handle Seattle. When you think Seattle's, you know, finally going to start to show their true colors down the stretch here, and maybe they will, but what were you saying, Tony? Seattle's got Arizona this week
and
coming up.
San Fran
on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Their season may be played out in the next 2 weeks.
Really could be.
It gets you every year. You look and you say, well, this team's going to be immune from the Super Bowl slump. Although Super Bowl losers tend to have the slump more than the Super Bowl winners. You know, they get there, they get close, and then they fail. Maybe it's they take a few shots and a couple guys to get them over the hump and they spend the money the wrong way. I don't know.
Maybe.
What it is.
But it's, the streak is now, and we'll see what Seattle does this year. No Super Bowl champion has won a playoff game the next year since New England went back to back. 03, 04. A Super Bowl champion hasn't won a playoff game.
So a decade.
Right.
Basically.
I mean, that's a long time in the NFL.
It's 10 years.
Winning championships that aren't winning a game.
They're not in the playoffs right now.
No, they're not.
Yeah, and you look at them, and they did lose depth, clearly, on the defensive line. The Jags helped them, thin out that defensive front. And they have had some injuries, and it's been tougher to overcome because they can't just roll players of equal caliber in there. And even when they have, you know, they're a team like most that rotates heavily on the defensive front. You know, those guys get worn down. They haven't been as stout against the run. They've been terrible against tight ends this year. They've had injuries. Bobby Wagner's missed a lot of time.
Yep.
It's caught up to them. They don't really have, outside of Marshawn Lynch, any playmakers on that offense for Russell Wilson.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Golden Tate has shown you this year how good a player he is. He's probably underutilized in Seattle. They thought they had it in Percy Harvin. And, now they're kind of getting by with Doug Baldwin and a cast of who's that in Seattle, or not getting by.
And all of a sudden, they've sort of, you know, 500'd their way to, the 10th game of the season. And now they have a tough stretch where if they lose a couple of them, they're really in trouble.
Right. Arizona needs to, it doesn't look like they're taking many weeks off. Obviously, they're 9-1. They have the best record in football, but they have a chance to almost bury the Seahawks right now. You know, it wouldn't mathematically eliminate them. With 5 weeks to go, there's still a ton that can happen.
Yeah, but look, you take a look at Seattle's schedule. It's Arizona at home this week. We talked about it, at San Francisco on Thanksgiving, at Philadelphia, home against San Francisco, at Arizona. Those are the next 5 weeks for that Seattle team. I mean, those are really, really difficult games. Three of them on the road, making it that much more difficult, and then they finish the season at home against St. Louis. But, I mean, not the next 2 weeks, it's the next five.
Right. So much of Seattle's formula was, you know, almost a we're going to prove to the world that we belong, you know, last couple of years. And they sort of proved to the world they belonged last year, so you wonder if, you know.
Do they lose the edge?
Usually I don't buy into that very much because usually this league's about quarterbacking. But Seattle was a little different in that sense. I mean, they always felt like we're trying to prove to everybody we belong, and then they proved it, and they won the Super Bowl, and maybe just not quite the same.
Really knows what's going on in that locker room?
Right.
But there are all kinds of stories about how players are not happy with Russell Wilson because now he all of a sudden he's the media darling, you know, when he really isn't the key component to that football team.
Right.
Very good play. Let's not overlook the contributions Russell Wilson has made.
Sure.
But that defense was the star of the organization last year. And, you know, he's the one doing all the commercials.
It was always a team. Who knows? They're a country away. We don't cover that team. But, you know, it certainly feels like it's such a razor thin edge in this league anyway. And they're just, you know, on the opposite side of that edge right now.
The report is yesterday Marshawn Lynch did not go to the locker room at halftime. Did you hear this? Okay, he does not go to the locker room. He stayed out on the field. He told Michael Robinson, who used to play for the Seahawks as a running back and now works for the NFL Network, that he was too sore or something to walk to the locker. I mean, that sounds about as ridiculous. Have you ever heard anyone being too sore so they're going to stay out and sit on the bench for halftime?
And it was 25 degrees.
Yeah, doesn't pass the smell test, obviously.
Right.
And Marshawn Lynch, he was facing a $50,000 fine last week, which the NFL suspended and told him, though, if he didn't talk to the media this week, that they'd reinstate that and give him another one. So he'd be facing a $100,000 fine.
Right.
He left the locker room without talking to anybody, and then he, like, called Michael Silver and Michael Robinson after the game on the phone. And so they're debating now whether or not that's going to save him $100,000.
It should not.
You wouldn't think, right? I mean, because he didn't have to face the wrath of Osher or whoever writes for Seahawks.com.
Right. Blair Farnsworth, my boy.
Is that your guy?
Yeah.
Right there? I don't understand what the big deal is, with Marshawn Lynch. Why can't you just give them what they don't want and they'll leave you alone?
Right.
Stand up there and say, we tried really hard today. And just answer every question like that. We tried our best today. Get them next week. And they will quickly tire of you and wonder why they ever wanted to speak to you in the first place.
Right. Most times in that situation, if a guy just comes in and talks for a couple of minutes, most of the media gets it. If the guy doesn't really like doing it, they'll talk to him for a second and then leave. I mean, it's not that antagonistic that it should be that much of a bother. But, you know, I don't know Marshawn Lynch. I don't know that situation, so it's hard to say. But I've had guys like that before who just really didn't like doing it. And you might ask them a question or two, and then you leave them alone. If they don't like doing it, you know, there's usually 50 guys in there who don't mind.
You're not going to get any good quotes out of them anyway if they're like that.
You might have a situation where you need to go to a guy and say, hey, you know, what's with your ankle? What's with this? And you can get them off camera. But it's become, from a distance anyway, it's become more of a thing because he refuses to do it.
Right. And I don't understand, honestly. I do get why the media wants to go and say, you're one of the best players on the team.
Right.
You've been one of the focal points of the team, fan favorite. What do you think about your team's performance today? What's so hard to understand about that? But whatever. That's his $100,000 if he wants to throw it away.
One or two quotes would get them out of your way.
So, right.
Hey, this, and this. And then you kind of go, all right, guys, is that it? I mean,
right. Then Ryan Robinson steps in and wraps it up for you in the locker room.
Most media just wants the one soundbite, and if they realize they're not getting much else, they'll go to the next guy. But, you know, again, I don't know that situation, so it's hard to say.
Hey, let's take a look here closer to home. I know you're doing the Ozone every day, whether you're here or not, in the building.
And whether the fans like it or not.
Right, exactly. Whether they wish you would stop our long national nightmare is not going to cease. You told us you got a lot of questions about this team needing to spend liberally in free agency, right? Or statements about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of themes during the bye week that, you know, you don't really have a game. So fans start looking ahead to next season. That makes sense. And it's, hey, they need to spend this. They need to spend this. And I just always make the point, be careful what you ask for in free agency because yes, they're going to spend a little more, I believe, next year, but it's not going to be a roster building where they have six or seven high-profile guys that are making the Pro Bowl somewhere. Those guys aren't available in free agency. I think they'll go after some big names, some guys who fit spots, but I don't think the build is going to change, and I still think that, you know, the prudent way in this league is to build through the draft because free agency, like it or not, remains very much a crapshoot, except for a few guys each year.
Right, but at a certain point, like, well, we do have this capital, and if we do it wisely, you want to have money available to sign your draft picks, hopefully to long-term extensions.
The key phrase you use, though, is the difficult phrase. Do it wisely.
Right.
That's a hard thing to do. If you're going to satisfy the hunger of fans in March, it's hard to do it wisely.
Okay. Do you think fans were satisfied with the level of activity in free agency this year? Typical Jaguar fan, just from your perspective.
Yeah, for the most part.
I do too.
Right.
I do too. And they didn't go crazy.
Right. Right?
And they didn't lock themselves into bad contracts for the long
term. Now many are not satisfied because you're 1-9. Oh, you should have done this. You should have done this. You should have done more. I wonder what there was to do more.
Right. I mean, people,
that's always the problem.
Could you spend some more on Alex Mack?
Sure.
You could have. Okay. I don't have a big issue with how that turned out because they made a pretty sizable offer to him, would have made the highest paid player at his position.
Right. At what point do you say
enough?
At some point you have to say when.
And they ended up hitting on a guy in the sixth round that looks like he's going to be a very good, solid player. He may not be Alex Mack right now, but at a fraction of the cost.
Right.
And for, you know, you have him locked up for the next several years at a tiny cost in NFL terms. So.
Right.
I certainly get that, but they do. They have all these young guys, and we've talked about it so many times this season, that they've started like 9 different guys on offense alone, right? And they're consistently playing a half dozen rookies on offense. That they're not all going to mature. Gus talked about that race to maturity and how they need to speed that up.
Right.
Well, they're not all going to get to that same point at the same time. So I feel.
And a couple may never. That's always the key here too.
Likely.
Right.
Likely several won't, you know, as they play out. Like right now, we're like, hey, you know what? Josh Evans having a decent year, right? At the end of last year, you weren't so sure. So it's guys like that.
Right.
Sometimes you're up and down on it, and it, maybe until they play out the entirety of the rookie contract, you don't really know if they're a building block for your franchise. So I guess my point is I feel you're right. You can't just buy a team. I mean, Oakland spent a bunch of money in free agency this year. Okay. What has it gotten them? They're 0-10, for goodness sakes. Now, clearly they spent it on a guy everyone knew was a washed up quarterback or appeared to be in Matt Schaub.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're playing with a rookie, but that was their choice as well.
The plan from the beginning since Caldwell Bradley got here has been to get a couple of drafts in and that supplementing in free agency in a bigger way would happen this offseason. That's pretty true to what they've said all along. So I do anticipate, you know, it's hard to know what names are out there until February because so many guys will come off the table, and that's always the issue.
Right. Even looking at some of the lists now, you can figure some of the guys are going to come off the table.
Right. And there's always guys, even in that last week, that you're like, well, there goes that plan. So that's why it's so hard to build your roster around that concept. Is usually if a guy is a solid guy, he's going to go back to his former team. So, again, that's always the issue is what are you spending it on? Are you spending wisely or are you just spending to spend? It really doesn't matter if you win March.
Which is why they've spent money on guys that they feel are emerging players that are still young, at least try to, right?
Sure.
It worked with Cindric Marks.
Right.
It didn't work with Dakota Watson.
Right.
But that's been the formula that the reason their team doesn't want them is they haven't played to a certain level yet, and maybe they're in cap constraints and they can't justify spending the money on this guy and the contract that he's going
to
want.
Or that team decides he's not a fit.
Right. I mean, or it doesn't fit exactly
which was
what
the case
they're
with
doing.
Cindric.
Right, exactly, because they went to a 3-4 defense, right?
Right.
So, whatever the case may be, and taking shots on those kind of guys. So there are instances where guys can play and they're not wanted back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've been trying to find. The success rate, never going to be 100%, you know, but you can afford to cast a wide net.
Well, the way they've approached
spending the kind of money
they're
spending right
couple,
now.
Exactly. The way they've approached free agency the last couple off seasons, I don't think, you know, I haven't asked Dave Caldwell this specifically, but I don't think he expected 100% success rate with the 8, 9, 10 guys who have been brought in free agency. Would he have liked it? Sure. But realistically, did he think every one of these guys that they signed as free agents were going to wind up being core players that were worth another contract at the end, the way Cindric and I think Roy Miller might be? Was every one of those 7 or 8 guys going to be worth it? I don't think that was the plan. It was to have guys who could play there until they drafted rookies to develop and sort of take their spots and push those guys out. And by those guys, I mean the veterans they signed, sort of push them out organically. If you
right, like. But at the same time, giving them the opportunity to prove that they're
right.
worth Cindric more.
Right, Cindric was the
perfect example. Perfect
example.
Yeah.
As was Roy, as was Alan Ball. Those guys have been sort of the model of what has worked.
All right, if you want to get in, 641-1010 is the number. This date in football history coming up, plus the Honda drive around the NFL. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Anything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America, guaranteed.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. It was November 17th, 1968. I was percolating in my mom's belly back then. All right, I was due on Thanksgiving, Tony.
Uh-huh.
I was born on December 7th.
Yeah.
So it took me a little extra time.
Right.
You don't grow them this well on a regular schedule, okay? You need a little extra time to brew. But it was November 17th, 1968, as I was still chilling in the womb there, with a minute five left. Jets up on the Raiders.
Ah.
And, it's time to switch it over to Heidi. Heidi game. Heidi is what exactly? I'm vaguely from some Scandinavian story.
The blonde girl in the Alps.
In the Alps?
Yeah.
There you go.
Pigtails.
What did she do up there in the Alps? Did she yodel or something? That's what you do in the Alps.
How could you not?
I would think. It just brings it out in you.
You got a yodel.
I would think so. But anyway, Heidi, whatever the story is of Heidi, I'm not really quite sure. I have no idea what the story of Pippi Longstocking is either. She was another pigtailed little troublemaker.
Yeah. Instigator.
Instigator is what she was. But networks cut away from that game, Jets leading 32-29 to allow Heidi to air on time. Oakland scored two touchdowns in the final 42 seconds and 43-32 was the victory, and it did change the way that there was such an uproar over it, and it showed you how popular football was at the time, right? This is pre-merger. Jets had not won the Super Bowl, so it just showed you the demand for the game, and networks, I believe from that point on, said, you know what, 60 minutes, you're going to have to wait, whatever.
Right.
You're just going to have to wait. We're going to run these things to their conclusion. It even surprises me today when I see a game like yesterday and I see Green Bay and Philadelphia and they decide to move off of that, because for years they wouldn't move off the main broadcast, and it's the right move to do. This game's not competitive whatsoever. Let's go to Arizona, Detroit, which has a lot of implications in there. And what the heck? Let's not kid ourselves. Every game's got fantasy implications, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Green Bay, Philadelphia has more, and there are more people that want to see Aaron Rodgers play. And some of those other guys, but it's so widespread now that all these games have implications. In the past, Arizona, Detroit, clearly you wouldn't want to switch to that game in many years because
it
wouldn't
be. They were the top two teams in the NFC.
Right, now they're the top two teams. But even beyond that, though, I don't know how many people care about watching the Arizona Cardinals nationwide with Drew Stanton at quarterback,
right,
of all things, but who cares? You know, those games, they don't like to talk about the gambling aspect of it. That's a legitimate factor in it, but fantasy is a big factor in it as well. But regardless, it was this date in 1968, November 17th, that the Heidi game took place. If you've ever heard of that, that's what that's in reference to. The Best Fence Company of Jacksonville presents this date in football history, and their mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price, and of course, giving you unsurpassed customer service. If you'd like a professional free estimate at your convenience, call the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the Jags, coming off their bye this past weekend, will head to Indianapolis on Sunday. The Colts saw New England score touchdowns on their first four possessions of the second half on the way to a 42-20 win over Indianapolis last night on Sunday Night Football. But that wasn't the only loss for the Colts. Running back Ahmad Bradshaw broke his ankle in the loss, and tight end Dwayne Allen suffered the dreaded high ankle sprain. Both are obviously expected to miss the game on Sunday against the Jags. Dwayne Allen leads the Colts in touchdown receptions this year with 7. Ahmad Bradshaw, as a receiver out of the backfield, is second on the team with 6 touchdown catches and is the team's leading rusher. Trent Richardson and his 3.4 yards per carry will be moving back into the full-time role at running back.
Got to be a career high for him, though, right?
3.4.
It's got to be a career high
for him. Oh, my goodness. The Seattle Seahawks' Marshawn Lynch saga, potentially one of the big stories of the upcoming offseason. There are many who expect that the very beneficial partnership between the two could be coming to an end. Yesterday, Seattle dropped to 6-4 after their loss to Kansas City. Following the game, Marshawn Lynch did not make himself available to the media in the locker room, which will probably result in a hefty fine, but he did speak to NFL.com from the team bus shortly after the game. When asked if he thought he would be in Seattle next season, he responded, quote, "I don't know, man. The Seahawks, their front office gets in the media. They talk a lot. I don't talk too much. I just play the game. If they have something going on, I don't know about it." Marshawn sat on the bench throughout halftime of the game yesterday. Instead of going into the locker room with the team, he said it was because he couldn't walk due to fatigue, but he still played in the second half.
Too tired of making it to the locker room, Tony.
Yeah.
Not too tired to tote the rock
there's
in the second half.
Well, you can't do that and not think that you're going to be a subject with the media afterward. I mean, that's sort of bringing the trouble on yourself.
Well, sure. But he's whether or not he did that or not, the media, the disdain for speaking to the media has been present with him for a while.
Forever, really.
You get the I mean, to me, and I don't know Marshawn Lynch from Adam, but I don't know Adam very well for that matter, but don't you get the sense he's the kind of guy who'll just walk away? Like, completely right. Walk away from the game. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, he did renegotiate his deal to get more money up front. Who wouldn't want to do that, right? Or at least his representatives did it for him. Was Marshawn Lynch going to get some kind of big money deal? The way that they've, you know, how much is left in that tank and what kind of team could use him? I mean, I could see a team actually like Indianapolis using him. Let's say Ahmad Bradshaw is already, what is he, like 31 years old, broken ankle. Let's say he's just not the player anymore going forward. They don't expect him to be. Trent Richardson with his 3.4 yards per carry has not been the answer there. But it would take a team like that, I would think, to...
1 or 2 years.
Yeah, one or two-year deal, right? I mean, he still seems to have something left in the tank.
Patriots,
he ran for 120-something yards. Boy, that Jonas Gray yesterday. Yeah. The Patriots are the most confounding team to game plan for, I think, in the National Football League. It's a different guy every week, you know? And you look back to the playoffs last year, they ran LeGarrette Blount down Indy's throat. So I guess very similar in the fact that Gray is the more physical runner that they've got on their roster right now. Probably would have been Steven Ridley had he been healthy. But... you know, 1 week, Brady's going to throw, you know, 3 touchdowns to Gronk. 1 week, he's going to throw to Edelman and LaFell. 1 week, he's just going to hand it off the whole game.
Well, I think it speaks to how perfect the marriage is between Belichick and Brady in that both those guys, the only thing they seem to care about is whether or not they win the game. Mm-hmm. And if the way to win the game that week is to run power O and give it to this great kid because he's hot and he's going to score for us, then they're all willing to do that. In that organization. And I think there are other teams that they get lost. We've watched Dallas do this for years, where they're running the ball effectively, and then somehow late in the game they decide, hey, it's time to pass, when it should still be time to feed Murray or whoever was back there. New England, for a decade plus now, has been that team that is willing, if this is what's working, then we're going to kill you with it, and we're not going to stop it until you figure out a way to.
I think it's easier to do that when you win the Super Bowl right out of the gates as Tom Brady, right? You're not chasing the legacy the rest of the time, but I agree with you, Tony. Look, it's easy to say, everyone talks about put winning at the forefront, but... Brady doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that cares that much what the stats are.
No.
He had that season in 2007, I thought, almost to prove that, let me show you what I can do now that I've got the kind of weapons that I've always, you know, that I've always lacked compared to Peyton Manning. You know, he put up the historic numbers, which Peyton since broke last year. By the way, Trent Richardson, 3.6 yards per carry in his rookie season, the high watermark.
He
scored 11 touchdowns as a rookie. You know, he wasn't great. But he carried it 267 times, averaged 3.6 yards a carry. So, you know, he had 51 catches as a rookie too. Pretty productive. And he's been anything but ever since. Right now, as you said, averaging 3.4 yards
night.
A run.
I mean, every time he gets the ball, those feet are moving around.
He had a
nothing
couple
just
of,
going.
He had some good performances early, but it was almost as kind of a counterpunch to what Ahmad Bradshaw was doing. Like, Ahmad Bradshaw was not, even though Richardson was a starter, he'd get a few carries. Bradshaw would come in, play very well, soften him up, so to speak, and Richardson would come in almost as a change of pace with his, more straight-ahead running style.
Luck may throw the ball 60 times on Sunday.
He might, but it's significant. Dwayne Allen has had a tremendous year, particularly in the red zone. He's been outstanding. Now, Kobe Fleener looked like the guy you thought he might be when they drafted him. He was a phenomenal player at Stanford, and having played with Luck, so you get those guys and you get Bradshaw. I think Bradshaw's the bigger loss, clearly, because, you know, Fleener filled in pretty admirably last night, but you're right, they probably will throw it a bunch, but the weapons aren't what they were just a few days ago right now for Indy.
No, and you got to figure the matchup to watch will still be tight end versus the Jaguars.
Absolutely.
Because the Colts always seem to exploit that with Andrew Luck against this team.
Right, and Kobe Fleener had the best game of his young career last night by far, so he's feeling pretty good about himself. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get in. More on the Jags getting ready to take on the Colts and what they have in store on the practice field this week. Coming up, they're on the practice field in about 5 minutes right now, coming out of the bye. Mike Dempsey, John Oger from Jaguars.com, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jags got a shot, says Warren Brooks. That's what they've got. What's coming up tonight, Fat Tony? The name of the show is Sugar and Spice.
It's Time Out.
Time Out.
With Paul Spicer and myself. And obviously, look, we're doing a lot of NFL Jaguars football here on Jaguars Today. Tonight, I'll get into some of my thoughts on what happened down in Gainesville here in the last 24 hours.
What happened?
The resignation of Will Muschamp. Not officially fired. He's resigning as the head coach of the University of Florida. So we'll get into that, among other things, including this ridiculous contract that Giancarlo Stanton and the Marlins have agreed to, $325 million.
Does it shock you that the Marlins are giving out that kind of a deal, knowing their history?
Yes, and I don't expect him to play 5 years, honestly, with the Marlins on that contract. But, I mean, they had to do something, I guess, to keep hold of that guy so they can hold somebody ransom for whatever they're going to get for him. But, man, huge money for that organization. Yeah. And they're not filling that stadium up. I mean, it's not like they have anything going for them. They were more competitive this year, but oh.
At least he's young, man. I don't get these Albert Pujols deals. When the guy hits 30, let's sign him to a 10-year deal at this point in time.
It surpasses the contract that Miggy got a couple years ago. He was like 297, and obviously A-Rod was, what, 275-something. Y'all are still paying that one, Yankees.
It's your baseball minute. I don't care. It's not my money. You know what? They need A-Rod, as sad as that is to say. They need him in the worst way.
But we'll get into all that tonight on Time Out with Paul Spicer and myself from 8 to 10.
All right. Will Muschamp, by the way, press conference coming up at the top of the hour in about 40 minutes in Gainesville, along with Jeremy Foley. Will should be the guy grinning ear to ear, honestly.
Sure.
Because he's no longer going to catch the slings and arrows, and he's going to catch that $6 million. Regardless of whether he coaches another down, and from everything you hear is there's no offset. Like if he goes somewhere else, he can go somewhere else, coach, still collect the $6 million, but he's restricted as to where he can coach.
Right.
And that will go back to the Muschamp free zone right now. As a matter of fact, Adrian Peterson is back in the news. Obviously, the NFL is expected to make a decision regarding his playing status sometime this week. Conflicting reports as to why it's such a PR game that's going on right now. He was supposed to meet with the NFL. The NFL said, hey, we set up a meeting. You said you wanted to meet as quickly as possible. Now you're not showing up. He said, you're setting up something that's outside the chain of what is allowed in the collective bargaining agreement, which I tend to agree with, you know, but I think they're playing a smart PR game saying, hey, you want to back in. You're not even going to show up to your own hearing. Right here, whether it's a kangaroo court setup or what, do you think he plays another down this year?
I'd be surprised if it's this year.
I would too.
Yeah.
I would too.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't play again, but I'd be surprised if it's this year.
You think he plays in Minnesota again?
You know, I don't know enough about their feelings, what they want to get away from. I just don't know enough about how they feel about it.
I get the feeling
comment on it.
because he's due to make something, what is it, like $12 million next year, Tony? Something like that?
Yeah, something around
that. For Adrian Peterson, right, which is a lot of money for a running back. Clearly, he's a special player when he is healthy, but he has gotten injured more over the last several years. that if Minnesota really wanted to get him back on the field this year, I think they're afraid of the fallout.
Sure.
And maybe it's short-term with their sponsors. Maybe they feel like if he's gone for the whole season, we can massage his situation enough. He can do, you know, community service, do whatever kind of things to get back in the good graces.
Take a breath, get a
reset.
It's going
to be 13 with this workout bonus.
Okay, so $13 million. But if they wanted him back on the field, I think this process would have been expedited. I think the NFL is almost doing him a solid, you know, to kind of drag their feet on this whole situation.
Well, it's such an unknown, and it's such a hot button issue right now that, you know, it just feels like everybody's being very careful to make sure they don't misstep, a la Ray Rice.
It's interesting. I mean, Ray McDonald's family came out very strong in his defense after it was revealed late last week that charges would not be filed against him as he was accused of domestic assault or battery. I'm not sure about the distinction in his particular case. And I don't know any of the details of it really, but you know, his family now, they kept quiet, which they were probably advised to do while the process played out. And they said, you know, never laid a hand on her. That's their standpoint. And maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I just don't know, but it does highlight the fact that here's a guy that hadn't even been charged with anything, had been accused of something, and now, you know, I think the 49ers took the right tact with it. That, you know, what are we supposed to do? Start punishing everyone who someone points a finger at?
Right.
I don't think you can do that. I'm not going to say you can never do that. It depends on the circumstances and how much evidence you may feel like you have. Now, at the same time, there's all kinds of implications of impropriety with the 49ers security staff being basically in bed with the San Francisco PD and given great liberties in terms of when they were contacted, how much information they were given ahead of time, almost like, hey, let's build the best protective barrier around Ray McDonald. So for all I know, maybe he is, you know, we don't know. But in the eyes of the law, guy hasn't done anything wrong, and it would have been a shame, I think, to have him suspended or even on the commissioner's exempt list with these other guys. I mean, Adrian Peterson's admitted to what he's done. Greg Hardy's gone to the preliminary part of a trial where he basically was found guilty, which in the system, I guess, in North Carolina it's a complicated system, but basically there's evidence that he did something. We know Ray Rice did it because it's on video. You know, with a guy like Ray McDonald, I think it's a slippery slope if you start suspending everybody who just gets accused of anything.
Well, and, you know, when I started covering college football and covering pro football, it was much, it's 20 years ago, it was much more of a given that if an athlete ran afoul of the law, so to speak, that the team, the MO was to let the justice system play out. And it's much tougher to do that now with the court of public opinion. And that's where the gray area comes in. That's where it's difficult, is it's much more difficult now to say, we're not going to suspend, do X, do Y, whatever, until we see what the court system says. That seems less acceptable, and that's where it's very difficult for the teams to make decisions, because people are wanting the team to play judge and jury a little more, which is difficult.
It is difficult, and I think they were under tremendous pressure in San Francisco to do exactly that.
Team would be right now. Anything like this happens, it puts the team in a difficult situation in the league of playing judge and jury before the court system does. And I don't know the answer to it. I don't know that there are no more hard, fast, we're going to do, this is the protocol to do this now.
Right.
And it's difficult.
Right. Oh, absolutely it is. And I mean, because we've seen it now with Ray Rice and we saw it on video, and which put a horrible face on a problem that's been horrible. Honestly, probably since the dawn of time. You know, in terms of man beats woman, okay, in domestic situation. And obviously that's not the case in every relationship, but it's been a rampant problem that, you know, the league didn't deal with, much like a lot of society probably didn't deal with. But that puts a face on it, and you've got Adrian Peterson on the heels of that, and you've got these high-profile guys. These are not guys that you just cut off the roster and nothing ever becomes of it, and they kind of wash their way out of the league as far as all that stuff goes. So keep your eye out for news on Adrian Peterson coming up likely this week. John, we got you here for a few more minutes. Let's take a look at the Jags coming out of the bye defensively. Aaron Colvin should be on the field pretty soon, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he'll play significant snaps in the nickel against the Colts, and that's an interesting thing. You want to see Aaron Colvin, Dwayne Gratz, Demetrius McCray. By the end of this season, you very much want to see what you've got at cornerback. Do you need to still address that position in free agency or the draft? Or by the end of the season, do you feel like, hey, these guys can be our main corners along with Will Blackman coming back? You know, that can be your combination. You feel good about that. I think it's a very key time for that position. If all those guys play well, then you feel very good about your young cornerbacks going forward. If not, then all of a sudden that becomes something you may have to address in the offseason.
The last taste we have in our mouth of Dwayne Gratz is, you know, single coverage against Dez Bryant and getting torched by the Dallas Cowboys. Dez will do that to a lot of guys in single coverage. But where are you right now on the stock, I guess, of Dwayne Gratz, and where do you think the team is on his stock?
I think they like him. I think they like to see him play more consistent. He has had games where he's been very good, where you feel like, hey, this guy could be a nickel, this guy could be a starter. I don't think it's been, much like a lot of the young guys on this team, has not been consistent as you would like. I don't know if they put him in the best situation on the Dez Bryant touchdown at the end of the first half against Dallas, but overall, clearly needs to be more consistent and needs to show that by the end of the season.
There's still too many blown coverages in the secondary as a whole. I mean, without getting this into a whole offseason needs kind of thing, it is a wide-ranging cover-type safety high on your priority list? I'm not saying
you
Josh Evans
so.
Has been terrible, but
yeah.
They don't have an eraser back there to make that can make up for a lot of other guys' mistakes.
That looks like something they need. Yes.
How do you think Cyprian's played?
I think he played, you know, he's had, much like Gratz, has had too many situations where plays have gotten out on him, but I think overall he's made the secondary better. Remember when he was out, it was a real problem for a while when he was hurt. I kind of agree with Gus, who said last week he didn't have his best game against Dallas, but overall he's been okay. Needs to get better, and I think Jonathan was really upset after the Dallas game. I'd be surprised if he doesn't come back and play a lot better after the bye, much like he did last year after the bye. But that has to get smoothed out. If he's going to be a leader, he needs to not have those kind of games. He needs to be better going forward.
Defensive line has been near the top of the league in sacks most of the season, really all season long. Couldn't lay a finger on Tony Romo. Now,
right.
that you're going up against arguably the best offensive line in the league in the Dallas Cowboys. But is that an indicator that, you know, that's an area of concern that, yes, while they have piled up a bunch of numbers there, are they as good as those numbers seem to indicate in terms of the pass rush? How do you feel about that group overall?
Well, I've said all year, I still think they go pass rusher in the first round next year. That's been my guess, because I don't think they have that superstar guy that nobody can block. So I still think that's a need. I don't think they have that above the boards Pro Bowl end that you would love to have. And I think also against Dallas, the threat of the run was so real and they were running well that it was hard to ever see Dallas in a passing situation where you knew you could just peel your ears back. So again, I think the whole game got away from them against Dallas. Overall, the pass rush has been fine this year. They've rushed the passer well for the most part when they've been in passing situations.
I don't know how good he is actually against the run. Randy Gregory of Nebraska has been mentioned as one of the top defensive ends in the draft.
Might
Apparently
be a guy
tackle
folks.
Melvin Gordon, all right, or anybody else on his team.
Right.
Cannot tackle Melvin Gordon.
Three quarters. That's what was amazing about that.
Right.
Three quarters.
I mean, that's what you do. You're a victim of your own success. They pull you out. They don't let you glory stat hog the thing. And that's enough, isn't it? The all-time record in terms of the
– I would think so.
Are we in the FBS still? I think so.
Now, I could see sitting on the sidelines at halftime because he was tired.
Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, that
right?
would have made sense.
He's wiped out. I'll meet you guys back out here.
That would have made sense.
I'm done carrying you guys. I'll wait here. I know I'm playing in the second half. And adjustments, hand the ball to Moore to me, please. And Todd Gurley, of course, tearing his ACL this week. Which,
well, that's too bad.
It is too bad. And it's really, you know, there are a lot of aspects of this conversation here. But you wonder why these guys try to get any money they can in their pocket. Who's the guy for Kansas City? I want to say defensive lineman, not a big name guy, just signed a contract on Saturday, 4-year extension with the Chiefs. You know what he said? He said, I saw what happened to Carson Palmer last week.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know what? He signed his deal, and then a couple days later, he's done, torn ACL. It happened on any play. Probably took a little bit less money. You know, it's a race to get to the National Football League. We had so many people tweeting us, John, emailing us, Gurley, Gurley, Gurley. They got to go Gurley. This team was never going Gurley.
Right.
If Gurley was, you know, 100% healthy and didn't miss a single game this year, they weren't taking
right,
a running
not in
back.
The top 6 or 7.
In that high in the draft. But you know what will happen now? Oh, with a torn ACL. Well, now we can get him in the second round.
Sure. Maybe the fourth, like they did with Marcus Lattimore. And I think that's really the bigger conversation point with the injury to Todd Gurley is why does a guy like Marcus Lattimore and Todd Gurley have to wait 3 years?
Yeah.
If they're ready to play in the NFL, I get that a lot of guys aren't, but if they're ready to play and they have to risk that injury without getting paid, it makes absolutely no sense.
Hey, Maurice Claret tried to challenge it.
I know.
You know, and, you know, he, at the time, looked ready. Go back and watch him in that game against Miami in the championship
sure.
game. And Miami can say all they want about pass interference calls and on fourth down or whatever they like. Maurice Claret was the best player on the field in that football game. And he looked ready at the time. And that's a position where you look, I think you know if the guy's either got it or he doesn't have it. Do you think Melvin Gordon? I think Melvin Gordon could have come out this year anyway, right? I think he came back. He chose
right.
to come back. But guys like that.
Now would be a good time for him to come out.
Yeah. If Todd, put it this way.
Shut it down.
If Todd Gurley had come out this year in the draft, does anybody doubt that he was ready to play in the National Football League?
No.
You know, right. But,
he might not have
an unusual situation
right.
though, because most college players need the physical maturity.
Don't.
That rule is trying to protect. I mean,
Are they trying to protect the player's physical maturity, or are they trying to protect the cash cow that is college football?
Both.
I'd argue heavily, 99% of it's the latter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're trying to all that concerned with protecting the player's physical maturity.
I think, in a sense, they're concerned about making sure the guys are ready when they get here.
There's part of that.
Themselves.
I think the NFL is more concerned about upsetting their free farm system. And
yeah.
that this is one for you guys, all right?
Yeah. You don't want to kill the product that, like, college basketball has
right.
been so hurt.
And while it does benefit to have that
right.
development of 3 years, that is an aspect. 99% is probably high, but it's more that, you know what? We start, pushing up against them. They're going to give us less access
mm-hmm.
to their player. You know, it's going to be negative consequences
right.
to it.
It's a rule that does happen to benefit most players.
I would agree with that.
Right.
I would agree with that. I don't think that's
it's
the primary reason that it's done. Hey, the Foundation Professionals of Florida latest photo contest is ongoing right now. If you'd like to win tickets to a future Jags home game in 2014, all you have to do is go to facebook.com/Jaguars today and post a picture in the Foundation Professionals thread, which is pinned to the top, that is indicative of Jaguars passion. It's that simple, and we will draw one in one of the upcoming weeks leading up to one of the home games and give you a pair of tickets to that contest, courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida. If you've got issues with your home's foundation, get the peace of mind that comes with knowing your home is in good hands. Foundation Professionals of Florida, licensed and insured, 287-2690, or visit foundationprosfl.com. We will come back and take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, just about 11 weeks deep, 10 games into most teams' season, albeit with Pittsburgh and Tennessee still to play tonight, who do you see matching up in Super Bowl XLIX? What is that, 49, right?
Yes.
Is that next year Santa Clara? Is that where they're going, 50, or that area, right? It's like Palo Alto or something,
yes,
aren't they?
Levi yes. Stadium, right? It's the new San
is
Francisco
Is it the new
stadium.
San Francisco 49ers
yeah.
Stadium? So they're heading up to wine country
for
Super Bowl 50. All right, we will do that when we return. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars today wrapping up here. Mike Dempsey, John Oger, Fat Tony. The fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Let me tell you about it right now. You can head over to Tom Bush Volkswagen on Atlantic Boulevard and see for yourself the 2015 Motor Trend Car of the Year, the Volkswagen Golf, and take advantage of the sign and drive event. Zero due at signing, zero down, zero first month payment, and zero deposit. Log on to TomBush.com to learn about this and other great incentives from Mazda and Mini coming up this holiday season. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Oger, fan feedback spotlight asking you, who will meet in the Super Bowl? Which two teams, based on what you've seen through 10 games, 11 weeks for most teams, Tony? What's the consensus right now?
Here's what we got from Brother Jason, Green Bay, New England. The Packers win 31-27. Rodgers uses other weapons because Pat's game plan to take away Jordy Nelson. My goodness, the connection between Nelson and Rodgers right now is ridiculous.
Yeah, Rodgers called him the best receiver he's ever had, and it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. Paul said it would be too easy to say Patriots, Packers, and go with the flavors of the month, so he'll say Broncos, Cowboys. From Ocho Fisho, I think we've seen this one before. Steelers, Cowboys. From Will, New England versus a NFC wild card. He didn't really call too much of a shot there. Jason said Patriots and Packers. Christoph, the Patriots and Packers, with the Patriots beating the Pack after Brady throws 7 touchdowns. From Brandon, Pats Cowboys for America's Super Bowl or Pats Packers. From Eric, sticking with my prediction from before the season, Green Bay and Denver. Green Bay on a roll. Denver will turn it around. From at Irish Jaguar, New England versus Arizona. Out there in the desert, that would be pretty cool to see a team playing in their home stadium in the Super Bowl. From Duval Doom, Packers, Broncos, and another AFC blowout loss for Manning. Keep piling them up. Hashtag Captain Choke.
What do you think the NFL wants? If they, you know, they always talk about the conspiracy theories of blah, 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 different sports leagues. Like, I'm so sure the NBA really wants the San Antonio market that represented in the NBA Finals.
Right.
But the dream, is the dream Super Bowl Denver versus Dallas? Would it be Dallas because of Dallas and Tony and all the storylines that go with that versus Peyton Manning's maybe one last shot at glory? Or would it be New England and Green Bay? What would it be?
Well, I think it's never bad for the league to have Green Bay in it because they're so popular and it sort of gets back to the whole, hey, we really have parity. I think it's the beauty of the league is that it's really the one league where it doesn't matter that much who's in it. But yes, if you're wanting the glamour Super
True,
Bowl,
they're not exactly struggling in the ratings, are
well,
they?
No matter
who shows up in
the game.
They're
the one league where that sort of, it doesn't exactly, you know, it doesn't kill the ratings if two small market teams get there. But Denver-Dallas would have to be the, you know, the glamour matchup.
You would think so, right? Just because the whole Manning storyline, right, shoved down our throat one last go-round.
Oh, again, Patriots-Packers, I don't think anybody would be going, oh, my goodness,
I don't think so either.
Denver, New England against anybody, I don't think they're complaining about that.
Right.
And really, if Pittsburgh got there, they're probably not complaining about that either.
Probably
because
not.
Because it's such a national fan base. And on the NFC side, I mean, the options are really good outside of Detroit and Arizona. I mean, if any of those other teams that we've been talking about today as NFC contenders are in it, I think they're like, yeah, that works.
I think Arizona's got a shot simply because right now it's hard to see them not having home field advantage.
It really is.
In the NFC. And, man, I mean, they don't seem to miss a beat. They're not overly reliant on their passing game. You know, they're a pretty balanced offense. Their defense has been the run defense has been good all year. Their passing defense, I think, is getting better as the season's gone on. They were, you know, a little leaky earlier on in the year, and they believe they can win, you know, because they've gone in and they've played those teams in their own division tough over the last several years, even when they weren't making the postseason.
But I'm with you, John. In the end, I don't think it really matters for the NFL. It's a neat story if Arizona's playing in their home stadium. It's a pretty cool story if Detroit can get to a Super Bowl for the first time and try to win that kind of game. And the AFC, there's a bunch of really good storylines. I mean, whoever comes out of the North is going to be very battle-tested. You have Andrew Luck and the Colts coming out of the South
in
all likelihood.
Can you see anybody in the AFC, though, other than New England and Denver, really making it to the Super Bowl?
No, I think that's the AFC championship game right now. It's, I mean, Peyton Manning's going to have to go win at New England to get to another Super Bowl.
And the league's so big now that if you get to the Super Bowl, you sort of create your own story. 2 years ago, nobody talked about Seattle. And then they got good. They made their run. And now Seattle's a glamour team. Well, 2.5 years ago, that wasn't the case at all. So if you get there, if you make your playoff run, it's so big and so covered and so talked about that it creates you as a glamour team once you're there.
I would probably agree with that, too. I mean, yeah. Boy, could you imagine if, like, Atlanta at 6-10 wins the division and makes it all the way?
They beat San Francisco in the first round, and then, man.
I couldn't imagine that. I don't think there's a chance of that happening. There's way too many good teams in the NFC.
Can you imagine how much that would stink for Arizona? If they wound up, like, 14-2, 13-3 on the year.
And they end up playing a team that just barely stuck in.
They lose to a 7-10 team.
Ouch.
In their first playoff game. Oh, my goodness.
All right, that does it for us today. Johnny O going out a little practice. Or practice kind of. Your window's kind of closed now. Practice, maybe.
I dedicated myself to this show.
We appreciate that. Gus Bradley coming up in about an hour. You'll hear his comments later on today on 1010XL. Coming up at the top of the hour, though, Will Muschamp along with Jeremy Foley, a fond farewell from Gainesville coming your way. We'll carry that for you at noontime, and XL Prime Time will get rolling in a few minutes as well. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold. They bring you the show every Monday. John Osier is saving his gold right now, so you can trade it for guns, which you can do at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit them at gunsforjacks.com. So for Johnny O, for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Back tomorrow. Lagerman's in tomorrow. Have you heard?
Oh, boy.
You might want to stop by.
I'm getting some extra
rest. It's usually
now.
A pretty good show when he's on.
That's a good show for you.
Sometimes it's a good show for us. So
we'll be all giddy.
Stop by tomorrow, and we'll see you then. All right, that does it for Jaguars today. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.